Your Excellencies. Mr. Minister, my Lord's Bishop, members of Parliament, and ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the College Council, it gives me great pleasure to welcome you here to Lincoln on this important occasion in a great historic event concerning this college. We are pleased and proud that His Excellency Sir Arthur Porritt has agreed on his first official visit to Christchurch and to this college to open this magnificent new building, and to Sir Arthur and Lady Porritt and Miss Joanna Porritt, we extend a particularly cordial welcome. I feel, sir, that I, at this stage, should apologise for the weather. You are probably well aware that the chairman of the College Council is responsible for everything that goes awry around this institution. I apologise accordingly for the weather, but I have noticed that in the last few 18 months or so, since a previous Minister of Meteorological Services retired, the weather has got progressively worse. To the Honourable Mr. Kinsella, as Minister of Education, who is visitor to this college, we also extend a very warm welcome. We are delighted that he has been able to join us today in the ceremony of opening the Hilgendorf wing. His previous actions have proved that he has been a friend to this college indeed. The members of the council may be perhaps pardoned for their extreme pleasure at the opening of this magnificent building, for today represents the culmination of 30 years of effort and endeavour. It was in 1938 that approval in principle for a teaching block was given. The advent of the war prevented the building from becoming a reality, but in 1946, the government agreed in principle that the college should have three major buildings, a hall of residence, a refectory, and a teaching block. The hall, Hudson Hall, is on my left over there, magnificent building, which was opened in 1953. The refectory was completed in 1955. It is also a very beautiful building and very functional. The provision of a teaching block was deferred while Ivy Hall was renovated. That's the old brick building. Ivy Hall was renovated and the George Forbes Memorial Library was constructed, which is in the foreground between here and Hudson Hall. It was not until 1961 that approval was given for sketch plans to go ahead for this building. The contract for the erection of the building was let in July in 1965, and the students moved into this building at the commencement of this academic year, which was about 2 weeks ago. Teaching accommodation for the increasing numbers of students enrolling, particularly after the war, was provided in a number of buildings, some wooden, which were brought from Westfield Military Camp, some steel, which came down from the Pacific after the war, and these buildings have, for some 23 years, been described euphemistically as temporary. I believe there is nothing so permanent as a temporary building. The Honourable the Minister will recall that he and I and the Members of Parliament know of one in another island that has been temporary for something over 100 years, although I believe they intend to replace it with a beehive. The ability of all these buildings to provide adequate education was at any time not very high. As the number of students increased, and as the number of students enrolling in postgraduate courses increased, leading to masterates and doctorates, teaching was carried out under conditions which can only be described, I believe, as deplorable. Today, however, we have gathered for the opening of a large new block, which has been named the F.W. Hilgendorf Wing, to commemorate services to agriculture in general and to this college in particular. In honour of the late Dr. F.W. Hilgendorf. It has given the members of council great pleasure to know that Dr. Hilgendorf's son, Charles Hilgendorf, and his wife have been able to accept the council's invitation to join the party on the platform, and on your behalf I now extend to Mr. and Mrs. Hilgendorf a very cordial welcome. I may add, back to the college, because Charles Hilgendorf was not only a student of this college, but he was also deputy chairman of the council at one time during my term as a member. Dr. L. J. Wilde, who has made a number of worthwhile statements, I think, has described Frederick William Hilgendorf as one of the most successful early teachers and refers to the brilliance of his exposition and of his ability to interest and inspire. The council is proud to link his name with this building and hopes that those who use its facilities will be inspired to adopt the inquisitive attitude to natural phenomena which he, whose name it bears, possessed. It is appropriate that the name of one of those whose own research interests reigned over such a wide field, from the flight of bees to the production of high-grade wheat and oats. There is a wheat, as one most people will know, a Hilgendorf wheat, which is a very highly prized wheat, and until this year was gained a premium price, which was a direct result of Dr. Hilgendorf's work. It is interesting to note that all but three of the college departments will be housed in this building, and it is to be hoped that they will gain inspiration from the lead which he gave to and pursue the topics which he was so interested in himself. The college is justifiably proud of the Hilgendorf wing. A large amount of the off-site fabrication and furnishings were completed before the building was brought here at all, which has given this building the chance of being, I think, a model building. I hope it may well be a model building for all universities, and it is certainly a model of economy. On a square footage basis, this is one of the cheapest buildings which have been built in modern times. It's in fact a building with maximum capacity at minimum cost. The result of this collaboration is an intensively low-cost square foot building. Although the opening of the wing will give the college some relief, the acute accommodation problems with which it has been faced over the last years, this building will not of itself solve the college's teaching accommodation problems. Teaching accommodation in the building was provided by the staff and students expected by 1972, Approval to proceed was given on the basis that not more than 550 full-time equivalent students would enroll by 1972. In 1963, however, it became apparent that even the college's higher predicted enrollments were likely to be exceeded. A special case was put to government for the size of the two largest lecture rooms to be increased, and this was approved. But the building, apart from the increased size of two lecture rooms, is designed for only 550 full-time equivalent students. The college roll in 1967 was the equivalent of 620 full-time students, and this year it is 890. So you can see that the building is only adequate for roughly half the people. The college is therefore facing readily already the prospect of building a cram to capacity, and its first year of use, the prospect of a further continued use of the so-called temporary buildings is, I believe, certain. The problems of these rapidly increasing rolls can be seen that even with the size of the largest lecture room in this wing, increased as it has, it now seats only 180 students, and the largest single class in the college is 220 students. The enrollment of full-time classes at the college in 1958, 10 years ago, was 338 students. The roll in 1968 is 890 students and represents an increase in 10 years of 160%. In courses for master's and doctor's degree, There were 5 students enrolled in 1948, 11 in 1958, and in 1968, 84. So in that short period of time, they've gone from 5 to 84. From the foregoing figures, you may pardon me if I appear somewhat in the role of an Oliver Twist. That's directed directly to the minister. The Hilgendorf wing, large though it is, was not designed to cope with the numbers of students of this magnitude. And even before it was completed, the college staff were already working on a case for a second wing parallel to this along the back and linked to it, which can be provided teaching and research accommodation for those students who are already cramped in this magnificent new building. I can assure you, Mr. Minister, of my council's delight of the advice that approval has been given to the preparation of sketch plans for 2 large new lecture rooms. I'm sure that this delight will be wholeheartedly endorsed by those students who have had to sit in the tin shed. Anybody wants to see it? It's round the back of Ivy Hall. In the tin shed, in the sweltering heat of the hottest week in Canterbury's history since records were taken of 104 years. I'm sure those students will thank the minister more than they've ever thanked him for anything else. Lincoln College is looking forward to the challenge which the future will present. The current period of economic uncertainty, when New Zealand is facing either declining markets or declining values for its agricultural products, the college is confident that it can make a significant contribution to the economic welfare of our country. It can do this if it is given the opportunity to press forward vigorously its already active program of teaching, research, and extension. This college, the oldest agricultural college in the Southern Hemisphere, by a wise choice of educational activities, has built up and is adding to a reservoir of trained graduates and diploma holders to press for an active and the highest standards in all aspects of economic and agricultural activity, and to pursue a vigorous program of research in a wide variety of fields. This building, named to commemorate one who by his life and work is an example to all who work in it, will help to provide the physical facilities without which this work of the college cannot succeed. I have now pleasure in inviting the Honourable A.E. Kinsella, Minister of Education, visitor of the college, to address you. He appears today in 3 capacities. First, he is representing the Prime Minister. Second, he is a member. He is the Minister of Education. And thirdly, by virtue of that fact, he is visitor to the college. He has proved a friend in the past, and I'm sure he will do so again. The Honourable Mr. Kinsella.
Chairman, Your Excellencies, members of the College Council, and ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you very much for the invitation to speak briefly at this important function. This important function being the opening of this very, very fine new addition to the Lincoln campus. It is named very fittingly after one who has contributed a very great deal indeed to the advancement of agricultural science in this country. An honoured name befits the growth of a very honoured institution. Important though it is, we're still just one unit in the enormous building programme going on in universities today, right throughout New Zealand. The present programme comprises $16 million of buildings either under construction or out to tender. And there's an even greater amount than this in the planning stage. So those who are here will gain some appreciation of the tremendous growth of the university system. However, I don't propose to trespass the ground likely to be covered by His Excellency. And in my official capacity as a visitor to the college and as a graduate, I'd like to express some thoughts on a different facet of university education, in the hope that they may fall upon intellectually fertile ground and promote the growth of serious discussion and planning. I'm referring to the very vexed question of entry to university. Many people don't realise the degree of independence that universities have as far as their internal affairs are concerned. Nor do they understand that I, as Minister of Education, have my powers as regards universities strictly limited by statute. This applies especially with regard to the functions of the University Entrance Board, which is the statutory body charged with determining standards of entry to universities. Nevertheless, even though this may be the case, I'd be quite failing in my duty if I didn't point out some of the dissatisfaction expressed to me by many people, including some within the universities themselves, concerning the present university entrance qualification as the entrance standard. The following factors have an important bearing upon this matter. First, it is now generally recognised that entrance to university should have a year of sixth form beyond university entrance if they are to be adequately prepared for entry to university. Secondly, there has been a steady decline in the percentage of entrants having university entrance qualification alone. This now stands at 33% and is falling very rapidly. Thirdly, experience has shown that these students, those who enter with university entrance as a qualification alone, in general perform more poorly than those with better preparation. Fourthly, the greater proportion of secondary school students who aim at securing UE have no intention whatsoever of entering university, but are preparing for the commercial or administrative sphere, for which the examination is just not geared. Fifthly, there is very considerable public criticism of the system of accrediting entry to university, while results within the universities themselves are gauged by examination. A consideration of these factors leads one to the inescapable conclusion that the university entrance qualification is now only partially fulfilling its declared objective, that of selecting those who are qualified to undertake university work. At the same time, the greater number of sixth formers, those who are seeking qualification for fields of work or study apart from the university, are not being catered for to the best advantage. In their case, it would seem that besides the usual academic studies, there's a very great need for a broader field of liberal general studies, such as economics, citizenship, the fine arts, and such like, to round off their general education. The difficulty, of course, is that in the face of the highly specialised course they will later take at the university, the most able pupils are equally in need of a liberal education at secondary school. And so we have the dilemma of the examination. I hope we can look at it impartially together. Now that the new university bursaries examination in the upper sixth form is becoming firmly established, it would seem that there is a great opportunity for discussions between the education department and the university entrance board, with a view to recasting the courses and the examination system at the sixth form level, to ensure that the proper needs of both streams of students receive due recognition. Education must keep abreast, or even lead, the changing needs of the community it serves. And I trust that these thoughts will give rise to fruitful discussion in the future. Your Excellencies, Mr. Chairman, may I congratulate the college on its new acquisition, and may I, at this ceremony, thank someone who is very often forgotten at ceremonies of this nature, the poor, long-suffering taxpayer who provided the essential part of the construction of this building. Ladies and gentlemen, Lincoln College has a very honourable history. It's progressing, it's going ahead. It's contributing a very great deal to the economy of this country. Let's all get behind it and wish it the very best in the years to come.
Mr. Minister, thank you very much indeed for that very informative address. I thought I detected the Minister to say that some of the university education in the past had fallen on the intellectually barren ground. I hope he wasn't looking in any particular direction. I also take it that we have had the privilege of a preview of some change in legislation. Perhaps I'm being a little presumptive. Now, Your Excellency, may I say again how pleased and proud we are to welcome you here. You have a long, proud, distinguished career covering a wide field of endeavour from athletics to medical science. And we wish you and your family a long and happy enjoyment of your present high office. Your Excellency, the Governor General of New Zealand, Sir Arthur Porritt.
Chairman, Mr. Minister, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, sir, for your very warm welcome, which is much appreciated. All the more so because today I am realizing an ambition which I have had for many years. And by that I do not mean being welcomed to a function by an uninhibited and self-propelled tractor. I shall remember that also as quite a unique occasion. But why I say that is because I have always wanted to visit Lincoln College, and it has been a great hiatus in my knowledge of New Zealand that I have never been here until today. This I say because I have, over the years, had many friends who have been students and have graduated from Lincoln College, and also for another reason, that on many occasions, whilst at home in Britain, I visited the mother of all agricultural colleges, the Royal Agricultural College at Cirencester. And through that, I heard and kept on hearing of Lincoln College, which I hope you will take as the compliment it is meant to be, because this college has now, and has had for many years, of course, an international reputation. And Lincoln College is as well known in Cirencester as it is in Christchurch. As we have heard today, Lincoln College is, of course, the senior agricultural establishment, teaching establishment in the Southern Hemisphere. And surely in a country which depends for its wealth and its well-being on agricultural products, that institution which is responsible for its education, both scientific and practical, must be a key point in the nation's economy. And I think for that reason, we are all very proud of Lincoln. Although it was born in 1880, it was conceived 7 years previously, at the same time exactly, in fact, as Canterbury University College, when I think I'm right in saying that a very generous endowment of a large amount of land was left for the specific purpose of founding an agricultural college. It got its own board of governors before the turn of the century, and of course, as you will all know, in quite recent years, in 1961, it became an entity of its own, a college of the newly constituted Canterbury University. You have heard, and I heard with great interest, of this sudden accretion of students. It is really quite an amazing growth. I believe I'm right in saying that in the last 5 years, it has doubled the rate of entry, and that in this very last year, there has been a 22% increase in enrollment in this college. We have heard that this new building is already insufficient to cope with the needs. I wonder if I would be making too great a prediction if I said that in its anniversary year, 1980, not so very far ahead, that this college might hold 2,000 students. It would be comparable to the growth of New Zealand's population as a whole. And despite all the dismal facts we hear about New Zealand's agricultural products these days and its economic difficulties, I have a very firm belief, and I am fortunate enough to have been well instructed, that this is only a passing and temporary phase, and that the basic economy of the country is as sound as it ever was, and that we shall get through this phase very largely with the help of our agricultural products. There may come a day when we have to eat wool and when we live entirely on man-made fibres, but that day has not arrived yet, and I'm quite sure that this college has got a great future ahead of it. Well, I'm not here to talk to you about this college, which you know better than I do. I think we are here to praise famous men, a famous man. I did not have the pleasure of meeting Professor Hilgendorf, but what I've read about him and what I've heard about him from a number of friends, he must have been a great man. I think it was Edison who defined genius, genuine genius, as a relatively small amount of inspiration and a very large amount of perspiration. And from all I gather, that was essentially Professor Hilgendorf. He was an inveterate worker. He was a man of 100% integrity. He was a progressive scientist. He was a genial personality. And above all, I gather, he was a most inspiring teacher. A teacher so good that he had to write his own textbook. And there are not very many of those. He was, of course, born in Otago. I must remind you of that. But he nevertheless remained a mainlander, and he worked, as probably most of you know, for 36 years from 1899 on the staff of this college. And during that time, on three occasions, he acted as its director. Even when he had retired from the staff, he still continued to serve for 7 years on its board. And what a magnificent record of service to an institution that amounts to. In 1930, he received what I would have thought was very meet reward. He became Professor of Agriculture with Professor Alexander. Now, this, I think, is a wonderful human record, and it is worth recording for that reason alone. There must be now, in this country, thousands of students who remember with great gratitude Hilgi, and probably more who remember his rather ailing bicycle. So I think it is most fitting that his memory should be kept green by this very fine building, what I've seen of it so far, but I'm quite sure it is, even if it is cheap. It is a slightly sad thought on this happy day that it is only coping with about half the population of Lincoln. But as we have heard, this will doubtless act as a great stimulus to government to do more, and to the taxpayer, of course, to do more. It houses nearly all the departments of the college now, at any rate, and, of course, research laboratories and laboratories for students. And I don't forget, having read the prospectus, that it also houses, that's the wrong word, because on the roof there are what are called five conditioned glass houses. Now, as an ex-medical man, of course, this has a very special connotation to me, and I am quite sure that should any of the students at any time misbehave to an extent more than is normal or natural, the glass houses will be the very places in which to put them. I think with this building, and I trust its necessary successor, this college will become outstanding in the agricultural teaching institutions in the world. And so it is with very real pleasure and a sense of privilege in doing so that I now officially declare open the Hilgendorf wing of Lincoln College.
I would take this opportunity, before asking His Excellency to open this building formally by turning a key, to thank him for his inspiring speech, which was certainly inspiring and not cheap. I hope His Excellency noticed that the tractor had a safety frame on it built in the engineering department of this college. I noticed that he said that this college was conceived in 1870 and built in 1880. He, as a medical man, would appreciate it. That's a fairly long period of gestation. I have great pleasure in asking His Excellency if he would accompany me to the door and formally open this new building. Thank you.